Welcome to the eLaborate Topics podcast, where we focus on lab-specific strategies for medical laboratory professionals. We're proud to be the healthcare detectives that work behind the scenes to get the results needed to influence medical decisions. Let's grow together and jump right into the lab.
Welcome back to another episode of the eLaborate Topics podcast. I'm your co-host for today, Stephanie Whitehead, and I'm joined today by a friend of the ASCP of mine. We work together volunteering through the ASCP, and I'm so happy to have her on the show today. Welcome to the eLaborate Topics podcast, Becky Woodford.
Well, thank you for having me.
Oh, thank you for being here. Before we get started, if you haven't tuned into our show, thank you for tuning in today. The eLaborate Topics podcast is a weekly podcast where myself and my co-hosts, Iwana Wilson and Lona Small, bring you topics to help you inside and outside of the laboratory. We are available on all podcast platforms, and we are affiliated with LabStream. And so go over to LabVine, get your free membership, and stream us, as well as other laboratory-focused podcasts on their platform. And share this with a friend. Don't be stingy. Share this out with anybody who needs to hear it, because we have a good show planned for you today. I'm very excited to have Becky in the studio with us today. So Becky, before we get too far into this, you've got a very extensive bio. You're a very accomplished professional in the laboratory community. So why don't you tell the listeners a little bit about your laboratory journey and what you are doing today?
Well, thank you. Thank you, Stephanie, for that intro. Yes, a little bit about my laboratory journey. Started out, of course, at college. Was trying to figure out which way I was going to go. Thought possibly medical school, and that's why my first degree is a Bachelor of Science in Human Biology. When I graduated, I decided I didn't want to go the medical school route. And so I went to work for Abbott Laboratories, and I worked in their microbiology lab. With life, I ended up back in East Lansing for Michigan State, and I had run into a friend who was talking about medical technology and realized that the clinical lab would give me more versatility with wherever life led me. So I went back to Michigan State, got my Bachelor of Science degree in clinical laboratory science. And there's a whole shout out to that department there. Dr. Kathy Doig, who was leading that whole department, she was instrumental in really talking me through that and all the coursework there. And I was able to do my internship there, luckily, at Ingham Regional in Lansing, and went on to work at Sparrow Health System in the microbiology lab. And life, of course, takes you in different directions. I ended up in Texas. And that was really due to the downturn of the economy. And anyways, ended up in Texas, where I started working for Baylor Scott & White at the Heart Hospital. And I was a generalist there and got to work blood bank, chemistry, hematology, coag, all those lovely departments and sections of the laboratory. And as I was there, I saw that there was a need to really help out the nursing staff with point of care testing and started asking more questions, diving into that. My favorite phrase is no good deed goes unpunished. So more responsibility came my way in that regard. And I became point of care coordinator along with still working the bench. That led to the opportunity for the outpatient laboratory, Baylor Scott & White, with the Health Texas Provider Network in downtown Dallas, which is a very high volume laboratory, services all of DFW. And that's about like 10,000 specimens a day going through that lab. And that's where I transitioned into quality and started working, getting that laboratory from just CLIA certified to CAP accreditation, and integrating automation can go down that route, but we won't right now. And I was there for a number of years and brought in different departments and working with lean principles and all that kind of stuff. while I was there, we got the Quality Award, the Bill Aston Award for Quality. And I moved over to Avero Diagnostics just 2 years ago, which is a pathology sort of, it's an independent laboratory with multiple locations. And it was mainly because I was looking for that next step in my career, the next challenge. They have anatomic pathology, histopathology, cytopathology, and like I mentioned, multiple locations in different states. And so that really helped get me into regulatory. So that is actually where I'm at right now. I am director over quality assurance and regulatory affairs. And that's what I've been doing for the past 2 years.
Now, I know your job is full of travel, full of so many different things every single day. So why don't you tell the listeners a little bit about your role working as a director in quality assurance and regulatory affairs for this private laboratory and what a typical day for you looks like. I know every time we talk, you're traveling somewhere different, maybe within the North American region, maybe not. And so how have your previous roles prepared you for what you are currently doing now?
Well, typical day, my schedule is broken down into, I've taken the quality management system, right, for our entire organization. I have quarterly checks. And so my schedule, I have tracers, audits broken down into that. It might actually involve renewing licenses, talking to departments if we're preparing for an inspection. We've talked about that multiple times. I'm in charge of really every inspection that hits all of our locations. But a typical day, really, I get my schedule planned out based on that integrated quarterly designated schedule of audits and tracers and everything. However, I state that that I'm scheduled, but anything can really come in my door. Functioning with quality, you never know what's going to hit the lab, what kind of issue happens. Quality is a resource for are we within the guidelines of regulatory and compliance, right? So I really love that our leaders in our organization can come to me with a question if there is a problem, they're implementing something, they're doing testing, validation, and they need those questions answered. So really, it functions on either scheduled schedule time, or like I said, something can hit the door. And then of course, that's the biggest fire to go through. Mentioning the traveling, I do travel up to our other locations. I try to hit them once a month. And so I do travel up to Washington. We have a lab where up there that is participating in clinical trials and with research. And so we have partnered with a location, a laboratory in British Columbia. So I've been able to cross the border into Canada and go visit that laboratory and using it either as a reference or they're going to be using us as a reference laboratory. And so it's a lot of travel. It's a lot of checks and balances, making sure all of our processes are in place. Like I touched on, the tracers, the audits that I conduct myself, making sure everything is in line and stays in line. And then we get prepared for our inspections that way. So we're constantly in a state of preparation for inspections. So I guess my job is really, there's a lot of just go with the flow too, right? So it's never boring. I should touch on that. It's definitely never boring.
I'd imagine you have to be a very nimble person. And have the personality to, you know, change with what the day brings. You know, there are always budding and new graduates who listen or people very early in their laboratory careers listening to the podcast. And we want to make sure that we provide insight for them to career tips, roadmaps for them as they're going through their journey of things just to consider. obviously working the bench and being that frontline person in the laboratory is extremely important in any laboratory. But if you are a person who's thinking, you know, what are my next steps? What is the next thing that I can do? And we like to try to give them some tips to think about and consider as they think about their career in terms of like a roadmap. And so I want to ask you, what are some of the things that you like about your position in quality? And what advice would you give someone who wants to go into a role in quality? Perhaps what characteristics should they, you know, if I'm a person who's detail oriented, or if I'm a person who, you know, really likes to look at, are we doing things in a correct manner, or could we do things better, or easier, or leaner, or, you know, other characteristics a person should look at? And also, you know, what experience certifications might be valuable for them to start learning, gaining, studying for now, if they, if this is a career track that would be interesting to them. I asked you a mouthful, so hopefully.
Yep. Well, to start, anyone can really, quality, I view that as everyone's job, right? What the results that we get out the door, we want them to be of quality and as accurate as possible, because we're all here for patient care. And it's very easy to get into quality. Like I had mentioned, started looking at areas that just needed more attention, looking at those areas where there's either a need, a question, I say risk reduction. For me, that was where my path started. Was I saw with point of care testing, we really needed to branch that relationship with the nursing staff. And it had to do with just opening that line of communication, making sure that their questions were answered on the evening shift, the weekend shift, where they didn't have as many resources as possible. Looking at those small areas, I say small projects, right? Not going, it doesn't have to be a big project where you do spaghetti diagrams and lean and all that kind of stuff, right? Just looking at little things in the lab where you can see where you could have an impact with efficiencies, talking with management and letting them know what you're taking a look at. And that is pretty much where you can start getting your foot in the door. And then you will be surprised with all the other projects that tend to come down the line in that regard. I do recommend continuous learning. There's a number of certifications out there. And I believe the certifications, it's mainly the information that is given through the certification. You know, I don't really look at certifications themselves. I look at the information that you acquire from that. And so American Society for Quality at ASQ, phenomenal with auditing and quality foundation, certified professional in healthcare quality. That gives the overall of healthcare quality there. There's lean training. That I went through Purdue. There's a number of programs out there. And then also with regulatory, that can lead into regulatory, and there's the regulatory affairs professional. So while everyone's looking at little projects and how they can reduce risk and just jump into what can be improved, essentially, looking at all those certifications that can help give that information on how you can make an impact or improve a process and put that all together. That pretty much, I would say, for anyone who's looking into quality, that's the best way to start. And of course, asking, how did I get that question a lot? Like, how did you get into quality? And honestly, that's how I did. I start looking at all these little projects, and no good deed goes unpunished is my favorite phrase. It led into more and more and down that whole line.
And you and I, we know each other because we're Texas buddies. Shout out to all of the laboratories listening in Texas. But we work together for a professional organization, like I mentioned in the top of this episode, ASCP, on the Council of Laboratory Professionals together. And I know you also volunteer with other organizations. And so have you found value supplementing what you do on a daily basis in quality with volunteering and being active in professional organizations like you are?
Definitely. And that is a piece of advice to, if I ever could go back and tell myself what to do earlier in my career, it would be to volunteer, jump into these organizations such as ASCP. There's so many different organizations out there. And by default, you get to meet great individuals like yourself, Stephanie. And you get to just that collaboration, talk about what's going on in the lab. How did other individuals overcome either obstacles or maneuver through different areas? The new information, the new technology that's out there, all that, those relationships, they're instrumental, right? You can take tools, resources that others have without recreating the wheel. Time is so short often in the lab, and it's nice to be able to just reach out to those individuals, those organizations, and tap into the resources, people that, you know, you can just collaborate on different projects and work together with them. So honestly, the volunteering, if I could have started that earlier in my career, it would have been beneficial. So I would say to anyone listening, the best thing that you can do is join ASCP, jump on one of these committees, and just work on those relationships. And that will exponentially help your organization, help your career. I can't stress that enough, actually. So.
Yeah, I agree. Wholeheartedly. You know, I think I had gotten to a point in my career where I kind of felt like it was Groundhog's Day. Like, I kind of felt like it was stagnant. I knew I had the capabilities and the potential to impact change. I just didn't see where I was making that impact on a day-to-day basis in my own laboratory, even though, you know, I was the director, or I am the director. And I would say volunteering in a number of organizations has completely changed that. It hasn't only changed that for me feeling like I'm making an impact, but it's also opened my mind. I mean, you meet many incredibly talented, like yourself, Becky, laboratory professionals, some that are entrepreneurs, some that are educators, some that have written textbooks. And then you start thinking, can I write a textbook? Can I be an entrepreneur? Can we work together on something? And so, you know, what you see in front of you in your home state, in your laboratory, is not all that there is. And so I encourage people to network, 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 and understand what's out there. And speaking of understanding what's out there, because I have you, Becky, quality extraordinaire, quality aficionado. I wanted to ask you, what is up with all the accreditation agencies? There's so many. And as a director of my laboratory, it's hard to understand. We are obviously a CAP accredited laboratory, but, you know, there are options now, and there haven't always been as many options as there are now, but there are options. There are COLA, there's CAP, there's the leading laboratories. Actually, if you're listening to this, and I'll link it in the show notes, in this season, season 3, episode 16, I actually interviewed Nicole Colby from COLA, and she talked about some of the interesting things that COLA does for laboratories and laboratory professionals. But Becky, break it down for us. What is the pros, cons, differences between these accreditation organizations? You don't have to tell us which way to lean, but help us understand how to navigate what's out there.
Yes, yes. And actually, I have the benefit of working with a number of labs that originally in my career was mainly CAP accreditation, right? That was what I was used to. And joining Avero, I've now been exposed to COLA and, you know, leading laboratories with Joint Commission. And honestly, with the accreditation agencies, it's Taking a look at your laboratory, what the test menu is, where your business model is going, what your laboratory really requires as to which one will be probably like the best fit, right? You can't really go wrong with all three in the regards that they are taking your lab to that next level, right? We all have to abide by CLIA, but all three of these accreditation agencies go above that. And that does factor into inspections, which then go back to how your laboratory performs. And at the end of the day, like I said, it's really going back to that patient testing, why we're all here, making sure that everything goes out accordingly. And so, like you had mentioned, we're going to dive a little bit here into COLA, CAP, and leading laboratories. And so, really, like I touched on with the benefits of accreditation, before I break it down a little bit here. The benefits of accreditation really, besides just being with CLIA certification, is you get that peer review, networking, association with that organization, consultation. It comes with resources to your organization. So all three do offer resources for compliance, educational activities, professional development, and so all three are really good in that regard. But like I said, it's really based on your laboratory as to which one will be the best fit. What's good too is breaking it down into each group, right? So what I did to help myself take a look at this is I love spreadsheets and, you know, looking at the different topics here. And really, as we look at the three, CAP, we're going to start very basic here on the overview of each one. CAP, a College of American Pathologists, and it's overseen by College of American Pathologists and accredits medical laboratories. COLA is physician directed organization. And so then also leading laboratories is Joint Commission, and they are really increased visibility and prominence of the laboratory team and exemplary focus on the impact of quality patient outcomes. And so the organizations here, if you look at all three, how many laboratories are accredited, we'll start with CAP. There's over 8,000 that are accredited. There's laboratories outside the U.S. that are accredited through CAP. COLA, there's almost 7,500. The Joint Commission, over 2,000. And so as we take a look at which labs are actually eligible for accreditation for each, CAP and the Joint Commission, really pretty much across the board, any laboratory really for eligibility can be accredited. When we look at COLA, there is going to be a specialty of testing, restriction a little bit there. They don't accredit labs that do histocompatibility testing or cytogenetics or forensic drug testing. So like I was saying, when you're taking a look at your testing menu and where your laboratory is going in the future, if that is testing that your lab will be doing, COLA does not accredit labs with that testing. And then as we look into the application process, really across the board and taking the stance here, I'm not leaning one way or the other. You do have the application with all three where you submit that paperwork and they all have the initial inspection. There's differences in the inspection process for all three. CAP, you're going to have peer inspectors come in. So a group of inspectors coming from another facility of comparable size. And that's really with the collaboration aspect, the spirit of CAP, you can say. COLA actually has their own inspectors. So you have an inspector that's coming straight from COLA to do the inspection. And then leading laboratories or Joint Commission, they will send an inspector, and their inspectors are medical technologists with a master's degree, certification from ASCP. They have their work experience in the areas, And so when we're looking at these inspections, like I said, CAP, you're going to also want to take a look at your laboratory to see the size of it and if you can provide an inspection team that can go out. Because of course, that's, you know, that peer collaboration of an inspection. When we're taking a look at standards, breaking it down, like I mentioned, they are above the CLIA requirements, and the standards are above and beyond CLIA. CAP is a little bit more strict, and they are nicely outlined in checklists, right? So those are resources, going back to those resources that all three provide for the laboratory to maintain their quality and focus on the quality. The checklists from CAP are more detailed in specialty specific, and they're customized to the laboratory, to your laboratory, the testing that you perform there. Those checklists, they are reviewed by more than 500 pathologists, and they give little notes of what evidence should be supported to show compliance. COLA, it's not necessarily specialty specific, just like CAP, but there is that checklist that you can go through, and it lists all the different areas to check. And then, of course, with the Joint Commission, you have checklists, and they have very similar as to what they're looking for, not necessarily specific methods of compliance, but of course, they touch base on what should be very similar to achieving to make sure that you are compliant with that requirement. And then other aspects, I mean, all three accreditation agencies, they monitor proficiency testing required, licensure throughout the states, the cost, if we're talking about cost. The most cost effective would be COLA, but the other ones, you're going to have those application fees, the annual cost, or when, you know, just maintaining your accreditation. And then, of course, with the survey fee coming through. And so pretty much that is really breaking down all three. Sorry, Stephanie, I think I just continued to talk there. I don't know if there was anything jumping in on, wanted to jump in on.
That was a very thorough review of all of them. As a laboratory director, I appreciate that because, you know, although you sometimes fall into the regimen of this is how we've always done things, it is advantageous sometimes to look at, you know, but what else is out there and how can we do things differently? And based on where the laboratory is going, are there, you know, small modifications that we can change even in accreditation? So it is great to look, to understand the differences between what the options are out there. A lot of times I hear Becky talk, techs or pathologists talking about things that they wish were different. And this could be through CAP or through COLA or through leading laboratories, but standards that they wish were, you know, more detailed. Or, you know, I always still hear people talking about, you know, it's CLIA 88. Can we get an updated, like, in this century,
right?
CLIA 2000s, yeah. You know? And so for individuals who feel like there need to be updates with any of these agencies, what would be the best course of action? Is there a suggestion box? You know,
right. And the part about these accreditation agencies, I think that's really great, is all three have a great, I call it customer service, or, you know, you can call, phone a friend, you can call into them, and they have great direction on which way to go. And that would be the first stop, I would say. So if there's a question about a requirement, or if it's, hey, this needs to be taken, we need to take a look at this, right? And then it can factor into the accreditation agencies themselves are very active legislatively, I should say, that word, there you go. And It's a great starting point to call in and say, these are concerns, or how can we become more active in trying to update or request an update? And those directions can come there. There's many different avenues along those lines, but I would say with these accreditation agencies, they really do help guide and interpret those requirements. And I'm right there with you, where there's a number of them that wondering if can take a look at. And that goes back to CLIAC and all that kind of stuff, right? So there's a number of conversations going on out there, but I would say starting with calling into your accreditation agency, and then they give you that great roadmap as to how, which way you can go with that.
I wanted to ask you also, because you've seen so many labs, you've done so many audits, and you've seen so many processes and how so many different laboratories operate from a quality standpoint. And I'm sure every time you go in, you have your own method of how you look at operations and how you review things and then make your recommendations, or, you know, you identify deficiencies. But just as a, in a general, and, you know, we kind of talked about this before the recording started, you just came from an inspection where you found, you know, the typical things that laboratories have, missing a signature on a log here, or, you know, maybe missing a temperature recording on a chart there. But just in general, in the laboratories that you've seen or you view, what is, and you can be as general as you want to, but is, what is one thing that laboratories, from a quality standpoint, should start doing right now if they're not doing it? And what is one thing they should absolutely stop doing right now if they are doing it?
Start doing, which I would recommend with laboratories, is the communication and talk. What I do with every lab going in for an inspection, right, is the immediate team members who are actually doing the tasks, right? Surrounding with them and making sure that what they are doing is actually in line with the SOP or what their feedback, what they're seeing, and having that communication, and also bringing everyone to the table. So it's twofold, right? You know, making sure that you have everyone, it takes the entire lab to get a quality result out the out the door. And so I would start with making sure that who is actually doing the task is part of the process of reviewing SOPs and preparing for the inspection and checking those records and knowing what these requirements are. As I work with the labs that I'm in, my biggest thing is requirements, or the standards, I should say. The standards should not be a mystery. It shouldn't be housed by quality to make sure that our lab is in compliance. The standards should be well known with the entire team. And I think that's really what you start basing, what we base all of our SOPs off of, right? You know, hey, does it match the standard? Are we compliant here? And as long as we involve the entire team and start talking with everyone and keeping that communication going, and it's very easy to only have conversations with certain departments or at a management level. I'm being a little blunt here, but at the same time, it's, you want to make sure everyone is at the table for that. And yeah, I think that's really where we need to keep the focus, especially for quality. Because it definitely takes everyone. And I think to stop doing, you know, stop doing is, actually say, it's not really necessarily stop doing. It's making sure that you have that culture of reporting or being open with each other. Because every lab, we encounter these, like you said, okay, you have logs where you forget to sign or add that documentation and stuff, and we're all human. We want to make sure that we stop making a culture of, oh, that person didn't do that, or, you know, that task is for that, that department. You know, we want to more keep the culture of reporting. We're a team. It takes everyone. It doesn't matter what the job is or what you come across. It's all of our jobs to make sure everything is done in a quality and compliant way.
That's that just culture that we talk about, right? When you talk about patient culture, that just culture where you are encouraged to report things that you find or encouraged to speak up if you see something that can cause a potential error. Some organizations call it a good catch instead of calling. Forgot what was the alternative, but you know, in our organization, they call it a good catch. And so we encourage people to find good catches in as many as possible. And all of those things just make it better for the patient, right? And a lot of we have healthcare insurance from the organization we work. And so it makes it better for us too, if we are ever patients at our organization. I have a lot of friends that are in quality. And one of the things that they face sometimes are that you guys get a bad rap. You know, people sometimes see quality as like the police, you know, the laboratory with their clipboards and doing audits and things like that. But in actuality, sometimes it can be a difficult position because you do have that responsibility, but not necessarily that authority. Like you have accountability and responsibility for the standards and making sure that everybody is doing things correctly. But, you know, in some areas, I'm not necessarily able to write up a staff member or, you know, coach a staff member. I can certainly give feedback, but I don't have like staffing responsibility for the person. How have you in your role learned to work through that or combat that? Or do you face that? I don't know.
Yes. Actually, and going into different organizations, I won't touch base on which ones those are. I've come after predecessors who are more along, and I say that too, the police of the lab, right? The approach I like to take is let's partner together. Let's see what needs to be improved. If something goes wrong, definitely want to know about it right away. And it goes back to looking, keeping focus on what the process is, right? And because a high percentage of non-conforming events or whatnot, if something goes wrong in the lab, it's usually because the process isn't up to par. And so I walk into the lab and I let it know, build those relationships with everyone in the lab, all team members, all departments, materials management, HR, everyone that factors into your quality management system, right? It literally takes all different departments, all staff, getting to know the techs working the bench, the phlebotomists, the couriers, letting them know that it's not taking a look at precisely what they're doing, but our processes as a whole. And I touched on building on those relationships so they know it's not punitive. It's more, hey, come and let us know how we can improve a process and let's work together on improving that. So it's not me saying this is what needs to be done. Now, granted, do I refer back to the standard? I like to pull the standard in just to make sure we're all going from the same thing and not just from memory. And so pull in the standard and see, okay, are we following this? What do we need to do? And have it more of a group. Okay, how do we get there? Like you mentioned, my purview, I don't get to write anyone up. I don't want to write up anyone up. I get to defer to their manager or director if, per se, that small percentage, you know, it does involve something that happened with the actual employee. But I keep it based on what is the process, what's the procedure, what's the standard, are we doing it as a whole? And that, to me, is very important with quality. And essentially, once you start establishing that we're working together as a team in the same, we're rowing in the same direction, and quality is your resource to say, hey, what does the standard actually mean? What do we actually have to follow? As you partner with the teams in that regard, you find more and more team members are coming to you. Sometimes it's like, okay, too many people coming in the door, but love to see that where they just stop by and say, hey, I just want to make sure this is correct. Or what are your thoughts on this? Or can you take a look at this? And it goes back to collaboration. We're all in the same boat. We all want the same end goal. But yeah, sometimes you get the bad rap as we're police. This is what has to happen. But if you say, let's work together on what's the resolution or how can we work together to make that process in line with the standard, pretty much everyone jumps on board with that, you know, and you don't have to be the bad guy.
Because you're not a bad guy. You're not.
Right. Right.
Like, you're right. It's quality is everybody's job and we should all be working together for the same thing. So I love that because I'm a person who likes to manage off of relationships and build relationships and then kind of go from there. So as we wrap up, I think you've given us all something definitely to chew on. I hope everybody had their pencils and pads out and took lots and lots of notes. Is there any question that you wish I would have asked you that I didn't ask you? Or something you want to leave the audience with on this topic?
You know, actually, you did touch on it, which I've seen throughout multiple organizations, is just making sure everyone is at the table at the very beginning. A lot of times with the item to touch base on is what's the biggest challenge for quality or that I come across. And it's just making sure, like I said, everyone's at the table at the very beginning, including quality. Sometimes I find that quality is brought in at the very end or when something doesn't go right, but just making sure everyone's there. And that really helps with working through, making sure non-conforming events, giving it our best effort to make sure everything's in line. And just to leave everyone with my favorite motto, it's usually it takes a village. It takes a lab. And when I say lab, that means every department, even in the hospital, you know, materials management, because we're coming out of COVID, right? And that was always our supplies and everything. But it takes nursing, it takes janitorial staff, it takes administration, it takes HR to get that right result out the door and make sure that we are being as compliant and in line as possible. And just to remember that we are all one big team and rowing in the same direction. And as long as we collaborate, we have those open communications, we are going to get there. And at the end of the day, get those results out to the patients, the clinicians, and really add to that quality of care. So
thank you. Thank you for all of that information today. That has been, like I said, a wealth of information. I think our guests are going to get a lot out of this show. As we wrap things up, you're a friend of the show now. You are official Elaborate Topics friend of our podcast. And whenever you would like to come back, you have an open door policy. We certainly like for you to come back and talk about anything that you feel like our audience and our laboratory friends could benefit from. But before you leave, as a friend to the show, if you could name a guest that you'd love to see on our podcast, who would that person be? But before you answer, we've got homework for you on this on this question, because you have to help me get your answer on the show.
Yes, yes. And I am more than willing to work on that homework, and that would be Dr. Kathy Doig. I mentioned her previously. She was one of my professors from Michigan State. I would love to see her on the show. She comes with she's a wealth of information and medical technology. But also she's known where, you know, we've come from and has, you know, where we're going, and my great respect. And like I said, she was one of the most influential people on my career choice. So I would love to see her on the show.
All right. Everybody listening, we can look forward to a future episode.
Right?
Yes. Again, thank you for joining me today. Why don't you tell the listeners how they can connect with you, reach out to you outside of this episode, because I'm sure people will have more questions about what we talked about today. So how can we reach you?
By all means, yes, you can find me on LinkedIn under Becky Woodford. Just search for me and message me through there. And I would love to talk to anyone and everyone about quality, how to get into it, how even just have conversations about collaboration on different topics. So find me on LinkedIn.
Well, thank you for coming on the show today, Becky. This has been wonderful. I appreciate you taking the time out to do this. And thank you for everybody who is listening today. Elaborate has an extensive library, y'all. We have closing up on 3 seasons, over 180 shows. We are listened to in over 100 countries. And so we appreciate all of our listeners. Be sure to share this with your friends. And if you feel like you have a topic that you want to talk about, reach out to us and we will try to our best to get an expert on the show, or actually maybe just invite you to talk about that situation or that topic on the show. Thank you for tuning in today. I hope that everybody has the best day. Until we meet again, until we talk again, have a good one. Thank you.
Thank you for tuning in to another episode of Elaborate Topics, where your hosts discussed relevant strategies for laboratory professionals. Please subscribe to this podcast on your favorite podcast platform and listen to us on directimpactbroadcasting.com. Stay tuned for another episode with information you can use to excel in your laboratory career.